podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. We are now hitting the end of June, which gets all that nice, saucy free agency going. But we had an NBA draft to cover as we went along. We had our preview in the previous one. We're back to kind of like pick up the pieces of what happened on draft night, along with obviously some transactions that went down between teams, some desperate, some just looking for into the future. But we're going to be here to do that. And we might even dip in some free agency previews, maybe talk about the summer league and another summer league that I guess you can't call real summer league. But my name is Andrew Reich. I'm one of the co-hosts of the show. I'm joined by my other co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing?
I was going to say you're joined by John Bon Jovi. And I'm like, wow,
I was like adjourned. No, I'm not adjourned. I'm joined. But clear it up here. I mean, I'm not giving you like a tremendous intro to like kind of dip into your, you know, to your fancy of what happened in the NBA draft. I mean, it had a little bit of action for sure. It seemed like the silly season really got started like that Monday or Sunday night before the draft. It got started because usually it gets going the day before, which is Wednesday, because the draft usually takes place on Thursday night. And it's usually the day before that the trades start kind of kicking and flying around. But it seemed to happen maybe like a few days earlier than it normally does this year.
It was the doors were basically blown off by Cleveland, which, you know, a week later, there's still no real explanation as to anything that happened. But
now to preface it, you're talking about the firing of David Griffin as the general manager.
Yeah, out of nowhere, and then his number two as well. And it's just like, when did this happen? Then, well, Cleveland's talking about to Jimmy Butler. Cleveland players are telling Jimmy Butler stay far away from here. And then
they get a Paul George deal done, which is I mean, do you think that was the harbinger of it all, or the tipping point of it all with the frenzy was that Sunday report from Adrian Wojnarowski that Paul George has already told Kevin Pritchard, the GM for the Pacers, that he's basically through with the Pacers after 2018. So either trade him now for value or he leaves for nothing.
It started off, then it just became, well, who would he be a good 1 year rental for? And then, you know, then the Cleveland thing where it's like, okay, now this team, are they going to blow themselves up? Is there a chance in the East? And then, you know, now we just sort of realize, oh, it's going to be we've set up part four to be the end all of end alls. But it led for a lot of teams like, well, we have a chance now. We need to do something big because, windows are closing for lots of teams. So let's hop in.
Yeah, we're going to get back to Cleveland and kind of rotate back around there for the winners and losers, because that's kind of the main bracket that we're going to be using for this episode as we talk about. Because we're not just going to talk about the draft, because me and Adam have some pretty strong opinions about the draft picks and who we felt like kind of lost out or won out on the haul. Now, the second round picks, some of them, I mean, they might wind up being nothing, and it might be just a player that Adam likes or a player that I like that we personally subjectively think is a steal. We know a lot of these are built on your first round pick and whether or not they pan out or not. But then we can also incorporate a lot of the trades. How would you like to do this? Would you like to talk about some of the actual trades that got done or the noteworthy rumor rampant type of trades that were discussed before the draft?
Rumors mean nothing in the end.
You don't want to talk about the LaMarcus Aldridge thing with the Spurs. You don't want to talk about Paul George at all in this case?
No, because in the end, nothing happened. Rumors are just, well, I heard so-and-so was going to get traded for so-and-so. And let's just, I say, go with teams. Did they win? Did they lose? If there was trade talk, if there's something, we can mention that within the context of the team. Because it's just we're just chasing our tails. If it's just, oh, I heard so and so wanted to get rid of so and so, and oh, this team's hot on, you know, Utah's hot on Patty Mills, and well, nothing happened in the end.
And the thing too is that the tangible trades directly affect the decision making in the draft. Would you like? Let's just throw one out there just to get started. The Charlotte Hornets. And the Atlanta Hawks, who was they got engaged in a trade after kind of a funny Twitter exchange. Did you see the Twitter exchange between Atlanta and Charlotte where they were talking about trading tweets for memes and stuff like that, or emojis?
Yeah, and then the Clippers joined in.
It was obvious that the staffs were working together to crunch the numbers for something, because later that night, Dwight Howard was traded for, I guess you could call it, the poo-poo platter for the Atlanta Hawks. Miles Plumlee's like rancid contract that doesn't expire until 2020 at double digit in the millions salary, along with Marco Bellinelli. And not only that, Atlanta actually moved 10 spots down in the draft from 31 to 41, and the Hornets moved up to 31. They eventually traded that pick to
the Hornets. That is just the shocker of, you know, we hate Dwight Howard so much, we will actually move down to get rid of him. They could have just gotten rid of Howard and...
But why take on Plumlee's god-awful contract?
That's just, it comes down to there are no bad contracts, apparently, because, you know, we thought a couple years ago, Gerald Wallace was untradeable. He got traded two times before he got cut. Well, Miles Plumlee, why are you signing him to $40 million? All of a sudden, he gets traded two times in a year for having one of the top five worst contracts in the league. It's just, it makes no sense. And it's just all of that just to get rid of Dwight Howard, which half of it is on Dwight Howard because now he's ran himself out of a third town, his hometown, in a row. And then,
I mean, you got to call Atlanta a loser here. I mean, I know they like John Collins, which, like I was saying, is a direct effect of unloading Dwight Howard, because John Collins is a scoring center. So you needed a big man down low to kind of be like guaranteed points and rebounds. Collins can provide that, even though he's a god awful defender because he was always scared to foul out. You know, their second round picks were Tyler Dorsey out of Oregon and Alpha Kaba, who was like Mr. Irrelevant in the draft.
Kaba is not going to play.
Exactly.
I gave the Hawks a small win because if Millsap goes, you have zero big men, period. So Collins can't.
It's a reboot by Travis Schlink, the new GM.
Yeah, but the problem is you're rebooting when so many other teams are either deep into a rebuild or just hit the reset button. So you are too good to be bad as you think, because you have, you know, high money in Schroeder, you have high money in Bazemore, and then, well, you haven't had picks outside of, you know, Torian Prince.
You know, Malcolm Delaney they got overseas, and then Bembry we haven't really seen yet, even though he's had some bright spots. And then there's a lot of questions at the wing spot, because that was their strength in the regular season, is that they were pretty good and pretty deep at the small forward slash power forward. But look at who's the free agents here. You got Ilyasova, Cephalosha, Muscala, who might get
and
paid.
They're all gone. So
yeah, they might all get acquired somewhere else.
To
you know?
Get somebody at 19 who can come in and probably have to play a bulk of minutes. I think it's a small victory considering the huge loss they took just to get rid of Dwight Howard. So I
and
gave
just,
him,
oh, go ahead, go ahead.
I gave him the smallest of W's, whereas you think that's an L.
I think that's a big L. The last shoe to drop for Atlanta, and we can kind of connect this with the free agency, you know, bonanza that's going to be starting by the time people listen to this podcast, you know, or, well, you know, I lie because we have a week. We have a week in between this year compared to most drafts when you only have maybe a few days before the free agency kicks off and things get going. But Paul Millsap is the last shoe to drop. Where would you expect him? I'm thinking kind of Denver, maybe Sacramento.
I have no idea where he's going. I just think or Atlanta's like, we can't. He's not going to come back to us now.
Where would you see as a destination?
I have no idea who wants to pay for a 32-year-old power forward who will be – the last half of his contract will probably be toxic.
Yeah, I was thinking Minnesota too, but we're going to get to them next, I would say, because Minnesota's out of the mix for Paul Millsap for a big reason. The other one, you know, the Hornets – you know, here's the thing about their draft. I really liked what they did. Malik Monk is one of my favorites, and I think that he's going to be a really good shooter. If he just can get the athleticism down and his defense is okay and the short wingspan that he has doesn't affect his, you know, his ability to stay on the court, I think he'll pay off dividends at the number 11 pick. The other one was Dwayne Bacon, who they actually traded down and got at number 40. And then there's Dwight Howard. So you would think, okay, that's a win. You got two decent players in the draft at the shooting guard position. You added athleticism, and then you're bringing Dwight Howard and unloading Miles Plumlee's terrible contract. That's all. It all seems like a win, a big W. But here's the big asterisk. You got Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard is a he's the Dwight. They call him the Dwightmare for a reason, Adam.
Yeah, but it's Malik Monk will be like he'll be Lou Williams and J.R. Smith. He will just shoot 15 shots a game, whether
but
he hits.
Williams and J.R. Smith became key players on very good teams that in their, you know, eventually in their careers.
Well, Lou Williams just became, he was always a second, you know, off the bench type guy, whereas J.R. Smith is like, I'm just going to shoot, I don't care. Yes. And that's what Malik Monk's going to do. He's going to shoot 15 shots and he will shoot you out of contest sometimes and you just have to run it. But for a team that has no shooting and no outside presence with Kid Gilchrist and Batum, I think it's a solid win for them. And, you know, considering the we had mentioned the main problem or main issue going into it with Charlotte was, well, they have no big men who can do anything.
And they had no cap space to move. They had to do it in a trade.
You have Cody Zeller and your backup's Frank Kaminsky, who's not a rebounder at all.
A stretch five who can't play the five. Yeah. So
yeah, in order to get a low post guy and, you know, you desperately needed shooters and actually pick up shooters, I give them a solid victory.
And not only that, they didn't have to give up Kid Gilchrist. They didn't give up Batum. They didn't give up Marvin Williams even. Like, they gave up none of their, like, role player value. Like, Bellinelli, I know he averaged 10 points and 2 assists, and he's still a very good free throw shooter, but he wasn't turning the dial for Charlotte. Come on now. You know, I mean, he was just another guy.
Also, don't forget, he was also platooned with Lamb, who...
Yeah,
you know,
they're constantly in and out of love with. Yeah.
Yeah, and they bid against nobody for his services, so... It's one of those things where, yeah, you just... You get lucky with the way the draft falls. All right, we get Howard for nothing, and then... Okay, we get shooting with no maneuverability. Victory.
Okay, can we declare victory for the Minnesota Timberwolves right off the bat? Now, I want you to get fired up here, Adam, because you know Boston had to be in the mix for Jimmy Butler through the discussions with that number 3 pick that they traded down.
I disagree.
With. Okay, give me that reason.
Jay Crowder.
Jay Crowder's tremendous contract.
Jay Crowder's tremendous contract. Jaylen Brown and Josh Smith or Josh Jackson / Jason Tatum. They're all small forwards. Why are you, your need for Jimmy Butler is sort of cools down if you're really looking elsewhere.
Not only that, if you got Butler in the trade, that automatically takes you out of the Gordon Hayward sweepstakes, and now your leverage for Blake Griffin has shrunk because now Blake Griffin's people know that Boston's going to be right after him because they know if they don't get him, then they're not going to be able to get anyone in free agency.
And as we've seen with Utah, you know, they can play Hayward can play a small four, a fast four. So, you know, he could play with Crowder and Avery Bradley. So that's not out of the question. It's just, well, who do we want to go after? Who's our targets? Is it Butler? Yeah, 2 years ago it was. But then all of a sudden, well, we want these guys instead. So let's just take, you know, our picks and not. But Minnesota, yes, they hornswoggled.
Hornswoggled? That's a good one. Wait a minute. Is that a verb? Is that a real verb?
Yes.
Or ransacked, or would you call this like a steal, highway robbery? Would you go into the extreme on the robbery phrase for this trade?
It has to be a top five worst trade all time draft day, because the kicker for the trade is you gave up the 16th pick. Matt, you gave him the pick back. You could just said, well, give us Jimmy Butler. For, you know, okay, we like Dunn for some reason. Okay, maybe it was just the Thibodeau system.
Yeah, I'm not trying to poo-poo on Chris Dunn. I try, you know, I know someone from the Place to Be Nation network is probably just plugging their ears or about to throw their phone at the wall, you know, Providence favorite. The problem with Chris Dunn is just that if you can't shoot, your athleticism is suspect, and your defense isn't really like a difference-making type of defense, then you've got a long way to go.
It just takes a team. Look at Vivek and Buddy Hield. He had a hard on for him. All of a sudden, oh well, there's a reason Cousins went to New Orleans in the end, because he loved Buddy. Okay, Chicago loved Chris Dunn, and that was okay.
Well, let's isolate the details of that for Chicago, just to try to like find some kind of like. some kind of nice tasting fruit in this. A lot of people feel like rotten apples. Let's start with Dunn, okay? Do you think Dunn in a couple of years could turn out to be a starting level point guard or a good defensive Patrick Beverley type of point guard?
Oh, he already is a starting level point guard and a team that has Michael Carter Williams.
Okay, I understand
Grant.
That, but I'm talking about a starter on a good team, like a team for the future.
You never know. He'll never be the number one option.
Okay, let's discard that. Zach LaVine coming off of the ACL. We've talked ad nauseum about the dilemma that Minnesota was going to have between Andrew Wiggins and Zach LaVine, because they were both lottery picks in the 2014 draft, which means that they were both going to be restricted free agents at the end of 2018. That was going to be a very tough decision to try to, if you wanted to extend both of them, because Wiggins is going to get max. Zach LaVine is the type of player with his athleticism even after the knee injury and his efficiency on offense, because he averaged 19 points a game before the injury. He was going to demand something around max. It's kind of like what Nick Batum got, I guess would be fair to say. So that eliminates that problem. And then you got Towns, who you got to extend in a year or two. So now they don't have that problem anymore. You got Jimmy Butler on two more years of what would be a fair max, a fair contract by his quality. I mean, is it under 20 million or just over 20 million a year the last 2 years?
I wanted to say it was 18, but I don't.
It's lower than normal.
It's not super high, but just, you know, Minnesota, it was a steal getting that. And then the fact you get a draft pick back at the end, that's just the robbery part.
I didn't like what Minnesota did with the pick that they were able to keep in this quote-unquote highway robbery. That was Justin Patton out of Creighton. Like, he would have been a great fit in a lot of places, but not in Minnesota. That's the only thing I didn't like about it, because he's kind of like Carl Anthony Towns Jr. Is that a okay way of saying it?
Kind of, but look at it this way. Their bench was – they don't have much of a bench. You lose – Pekovic took up most of their cap money.
Which is gone.
You know, Bielitsa was the – he was, you know, their stretch four backup guy. So they don't have a real backup big man, so – he's a developmental prospect. He'll spend, you know, probably next year down in Iowa, in the G League. But the pick wasn't that great. They could have probably done something a little better. But in the end, if you steal Jimmy Butler, who cares how bad you flub the draft?
Why? Okay, this is very basic for a lot of the listeners that are obviously in the know already about how good Jimmy Butler is. But what is Jimmy Butler being added to the equation to replacing LaVine? What does he do for Minnesota?
He
improves their defense immediately.
That makes him a playoff team, but the problem is now that team has no spacing, because Wiggins is sort of Jimmy Butler light.
Yeah, they like to attack the basket.
So you have no outside shooting on that team, and there's no spacing on the floor, so they have to sort of figure that out.
Okay, speaking of spacing the floor, you know, Chicago got Lauri Markkanen with that prize pick. Now, a lot of people are going to poo-poo on this if LaVine and Dunn don't really work out the way that you would expect. And they say, well, at the end of the day, you know, this will be the revisionist history that we traded Jimmy Butler for Lauri Markkanen. Like, is that a lot of pressure on Markkanen, or do you think he might be a good fit in Chicago? You know, a 6'11", really good shooting big.
The way the NBA is, he is the perfect fit being that stretch four and, you know, probably, arguably, top two, top three best shooters in the draft, period.
Okay, yeah.
Top three, three-point shooter.
You're talking about this draft?
Yeah.
I'd say he's the best shooter in the draft. Yeah.
Okay,
I mean, Monk's good when he's hot, but he has low percentages at times. If I'm staring down the draft board, I mean, you're looking at guys like maybe Luke Kennard, possibly TJ Leaf. They have some good shooters in that draft class.
Okay, so the best shooter in the draft, that's good. You know, well, he needs to put on weight. He's weak. Yeah, you can bulk up on an, you know, in the gym in the NBA as opposed to 1 year in college after playing, you know, in the Finnish leagues who aren't known for, you know, being all that special. The problem is you have Mirotić, who they say they're going to re-sign. You have Robin Lopez, who you stole from New York for
you're probably going to lose Felicio because he'll get overpaid in restricted free agency.
So it's one of those you have to sort of play him in order to justify it, and there'll be some bumpy roads, and it's just going to make the first half of the season really sad for Dwayne Wade before they buy him out. And
were you surprised that he kept his promise to do the paperwork to opt in? Because he did have some time frame between there to withdraw it, because he didn't actually sign the paperwork, presumably, but it turned out that he already did so. Do you think he's cashing in on $23 million, and he's probably at the point of his career where if he went in the open market, he probably wouldn't get $23 million. So I understand that.
He wouldn't get 23, and they're going to buy him out at the deadline, and he's going to join Cleveland. So
I don't buy, though, the notion that they're going to turn down Rondo's team option, unless that's already a formality that I'm not aware of. But I think they might still pick him up.
That's
mentor for Dunn for 1 year. I mean, I know Rondo and mentor don't go well together, but I don't know. I think it's a 50-50 shot that Chicago keeps Rondo.
It's one of those things you're not going to be buying anybody. You're not making a big free agent splash. So you're probably best just to pick him up and then cut him at the deadline, as opposed to just here's $3 million of dead money. We're not going to go balls out for, you know, you have no chance in Blake Griffin. You have no chance in Hayward. You're not going to go for, you know, Gallinari or those second tier guys.
So you would automatically call Chicago a loser, even though they got Markkanen, who could be a good player down the road. And Zach Levine
could be a good player down the road. You just the franchise, you just hit the reset button, but you did it in the worst way possible.
I don't know. I'm at least we're agreement on that one. The Atlanta one, you really took me for a loop there. The other one that you could consider a big wave type of deal was the LA Lakers. They packaged D'Angelo Russell, who had been their number two pick in 2015, their presumed their point guard of the future, alongside Timofey Mozgov, in order to unload the awful contract that they had, because they're looking Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, the new brass at the top of the Lakers, they're already looking into 2018 to try to open up at least two max slots to go with Lonzo Ball, who was their default number two pick. Everybody knew that Ball. I know there was a lot of scuttlebutt out there about, well, Magic's looking at this guy, but I think everyone knew Ball was going to go to LA. I never wavered on that personally. But Russell and Mozgov's awful contract, which goes until 2020, that was traded to the Brooklyn Nets, and they got in exchange Brook Lopez and then a late first round pick that I believe they wound up trading to Utah. Unless I'm wrong about that, because I know they had two late first round picks, and one of them got traded to Utah, and the other one they kept and they used to pick. I think it was Josh Hart.
No, Kyle Kuzma.
It was Kuzma? Oh, you're right. Now, how did they get that 30th pick?
30th pick was Utah.
Utah. So they did make a little bit of a move there. Now, let's first off talk about the Lakers with Mozgov and Russell being packaged together. Do you like the idea that they signed a contract that was so bad that Magic and Pelinka felt like they had to kind of scorch the previous regime's assumption that Russell could be a franchise point guard, and they just dumped him to Brooklyn?
Well, it's the same way we're talking about the Lakers here now. Okay. It's the same way I think Danny Ainge realized I can't play Fultz and Thomas together, and I'm going to go with Thomas. I can't play Ball and Russell together because they're too similar. They have the same deficiencies. They have the same positives.
They both have to run pick and roll for the most part. you know, with the ball in their hands. I know Lonzo ran a lot of sets in UCLA under Steve Alford, where he would take the ball from like the elbow or coming off of a cross screen. But really, you want the ball in Lonzo Ball's hands. So I understand that.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, and to get rid of the bad contract, to give up, you know, one of the players you thought was the cornerstone. Yeah, that's it. It sort of hurts. It's gonna, you know, the Lakers are in a more of a tough position than I think a lot of people sort of think this youth movement. But in order to get money for this 2018 vision you have, yeah, you have to package somebody good to get rid of a bad contract.
Yeah, but could they have done it – like if they did Ingram or if they did Julius Randle, who's going into the last year of his rookie contract. I mean, Luol – it was either going to be Deng or Mozgov. They weren't going to be able to unload them both. That's impossible. But and then there weren't a lot of other chips. A lot of people talked about Jordan Clarkson, but I don't think his value is as high in the trade market as people expect. Nick Young already opted out, so he was not an option to be traded. Do you feel like Russell was sort of their only choice, or they could have done something else?
Well, if you claim that Ingram's untouchable, your choices are Russell or Julius Randle.
Okay, and Randle, you know, the thing about Randle, though, is that some people think he's pretty good, and he has his box scores and his averages show that he's got some potential, but there's this sense that Randle's already kind of peaked at what he can do.
It's that he has that Carlos Boozer, like, yeah, he's good, but we don't see – he's just going to be – that's who he is.
Exactly. So do you feel like maybe just getting rid of that, like Zach LaVine with Minnesota, just getting rid of that whole, like, will they or won't they of trying to match an offer sheet on Julius Randle if he has a really good year going into the end of his rookie deal, like maybe just unloading him, or maybe the Nets and Kenny Atkinson and Sean Marks just weren't interested in Randle. They wanted a star guard, so they took Russell.
Yeah. If you know you want us to take this Mozgov thing, okay, well we'll take the best player you're willing to offer up, regardless of fit. Now you know Brooklyn has a star, but we are talking Lakers here. So, do you think they won or lost overall?
I felt like overall they won because I know some people look at like a lottery pick like the Sixers with Markelle Fultz. Like some people would say, yeah, but all they got after that was three guys that they're going to stash away in Europe again. So, you know, so they didn't really win because all they got is one really good player. Well, here's the thing. They still got one really, really good player. So Philadelphia obviously won. You know, the Lakers with Lonzo Ball, your point guard position immediately improves. Even if you compare Russell to Ball, I still say the point guard position improved. Would you agree?
Yes.
Ball is a rookie. Will still be better than Russell is now.
Oh, I don't know about that. Ball, I think, is going to have the statistics say the rookie point guard is going to have.
Maybe I'm being a little too high on him, but I really like him.
You've always been high on him. The Lakers, I think it was a win for him, you know, to bring excitement back into that franchise because they've had some pretty bad years. It's also, I think, a big loss for Julius Randle. Pretty much Randle, because if you're going to get LeBron, if you're going to get Paul George, the writing on the wall is there's no room for you.
No, you Ball know, and Ingram are your other guys, your staples.
Kuzma is your cheap backup guy, and Thomas Bryant is, well, good luck. Thank you for coming out. You're going to get 1 year to do something.
He's got long arms. You know, he's a big guy. He's a pure center. He's one of those back to the basket type of, you know, he's got some strength on him, but he's a very predictable type of center. You know, I was surprised that him and Anunoby did wind up getting to the next level, but Lord knows what's going to happen with Bryant. Kuzma is a guy who, cause we've talked about the Portsmouth Invitational in the previous in our previous show, which was the draft preview, which is the college seniors camp. Kuzma was one of those guys. In fact, six guys from that invitational wound up getting drafted. Were you surprised by that? A lot of the seniors?
Well, it's one of those. I think the tides are slowly turning on. Well, these freshmen don't have fundamentals. The seniors do. We need to do a little more scouting and to get this next Malcolm Brogdon guy, as opposed to, well, let's draft somebody who's going to be still 2 years away.
Here's the problem, though. You took Kuzma in the first round, so now it's kind of like Larry Nance Jr. You've sort of committed to it.
Yeah, but he's his contract is going to be only $1.5 million
because it was so late in the first round.
Mm-hmm. Julius Randle's is going to be like $6 million. Mm-hmm. So who's the cheapest thing to get in? Also, don't forget when LeBron comes in, assuming he does, this is all. If LeBron comes in, do you think he's going to want to be around rookies?
Well, that's been always, you know, Kyrie Irving had been in the league, what, for about 3 seasons when LeBron joined Cleveland? That was kind of different. Like, Kyrie Irving was the All-Star Game MVP, you know, that the season before LeBron left. Like, he had already been an established star, even though he was very young.
Okay, so let's say Ball does good, and okay, I'm going to be with LeBron, Ball, Ingram. Do you think he's going to want to be with all these undrafted, you know, second-round pick? You know, but no, he's gonna usher Josh Hart out to bring in his buddy, you know, his 33-year-old veteran who's been around 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, I understand. Like bringing Matt Barnes, you know,
exactly.
Somebody like that. Okay, I'm gonna give you the Portsmouth Invitational guy, the standouts that wound up getting drafted. I mean, these are very random names. Jabari Bird went to the Jazz. A lot of these second round picks, by the way.
Bird went to the Celtics.
Oh, he went to the Celtics? Oh, I am totally – I don't know where I went wrong on that one. I am so sorry. How are you on the Jabari Bird bandwagon yet?
We are not on Boston yet. We are currently on Lakers/Brooklyn.
So you're just saving it all. You're saving all that ammunition for the Boston Celtics?
Once we get to our – once we get to the next teams, keep it. So Portland Invitational, yes.
Sterling Brown with the Bucks. Davon Reed, who went 32nd to the Suns. I felt like that was a wasted pick. I was not a fan of what the Suns did. Derek White with the Spurs, he went in the first round. Damian Dotson with the Knicks and Kadeem Allen with the Celtics. So, yeah, a lot of seniors getting picked up. Now, for the let's kind of just go in general with the winners and the losers, but let's go with the Eastern Conference, and let's just go ahead and get going with the Boston Celtics. Cause...
Okay, we've bounced around Brooklyn. Brooklyn, I also was a win just because of that. Just going to. That's an easy win.
Oh, so you like how Brooklyn did with that?
You get a franchise player. You know, look at these other middling teams. Who does Orlando have? They have Aaron Gordon, who we still don't know whether he can play or he's just athletic. Whereas you have a face of this franchise for Brooklyn, who, you know, is he that good? No, he's making a ton of mistakes, but you know, point guard's a tough position to learn, and you have nobody on that roster now. You have somebody, so you need to start somewhere. Boston. It's a win and a loss. A win, you know, the third pick, you're going to get, you know, you got the offensive player who can score from anywhere, who'll be good. The problem is for fans, it's a big L because for 2 years now, the Boston fans have just been teased with big trades and big names coming in the end.
Well, they've been teased with trades, but they have scored in free agency. They got Al Horford last year. This year they still might do it. They still might get Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin.
It's been teased, and then the draft the trade deadline, big tease. And this year, oh, here's the big tease again. And then all of a sudden, oh, we got Jason Tatum. Oh, well, is he the power forward who rebounds that we desperately need? Oh no, he's another small forward who doesn't play defense.
Danny Ainge claims that even if he stayed at number one and he couldn't get a deal done with Philadelphia, he was still going to take Jason Tatum at number one. I just don't believe that.
That's the comments that are hard to swallow.
Yeah, that's the one where I don't get it. I think he would have just bit the bullet and still taken Markelle Fultz. Now, I know there's this assumption that he saw Fultz in the workout where everybody on the outside thought it was a formality, that he was going to go. He was looking at the banners up at the top of the arenas, and he was going to become a Celtic. He was going to be the backup for Isaiah Thomas. And then Ainge just decided to go, you know, against the grain and said, you know, I don't know if Fultz is that kind of guy after watching him in the workout. And he did a 180, and he got some leverage out of a trade with Philadelphia.
Ainge basically said, Isaiah's my guy. Is it Fultz or is it Isaiah? Who do I want on my team for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years?
But can that haunt Boston that you, I mean, down the road?
Oh, of course.
If Philadelphia really works out that you passed on Markelle Fultz.
He's putting his legacy on the line for this pick.
Okay. But, I mean, but here's the thing. Like, what is Danny Ainge's legacy if you look at it at the end of the day? I mean, everybody immediately thinks of the Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett trades. Now, those are trades where they were able to swing big names over in order to chase a championship. They tried to do the trades with Paul George and Jimmy Butler. They could not get to
deal. He's been riding the big three. His legacy has been riding the big three and Stockpile and Trader Dan. And, you know, his legacy has taken a huge uptick thanks to the Brad Stevens hire.
Yeah, but it feels like they still have that huge asset collection, so that if they want to take a swing in 2019, get like an Anthony and get an unhappy Anthony Davis.
Yeah, how are you gonna like all those
Cousins? I mean, whatever it is that they wind up doing down the road, it's not over yet. What I'm saying is the window for Boston is still very wide open. Like, it is not closed.
No, they're still going upwards. They're still a young team. However, with the money coming down very fast, they have next year to decide who's our core, who is our guys going forward, what do we want to do. But yeah, it's a win. All those second round guys, they're never going to play. There's no room for them. So,
I would call them a loser for now, because if they get Gordon Hayward or Blake Griffin, you know, it's kind of different.
But we're just talking draft only. That's fine. So.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Who else in the East that did you look at where you said, oh, that was just in the draft in general, where you said, you know, that was a nice pickup. That'll make that team better pretty quickly. Or if you want to go swing the other way with the losers and say, man, I did not like that pick at all. They had so many other options they could have gone with.
Okay, so we'll just – so rapid fire then. Cleveland, quick loss. They could have bought a second-round pick. They chose to do nothing. We saw Golden State. Oh, we'll buy somebody we want. Okay, no problem. Cleveland, oh, we don't want to do anything. Big loss there. Miami.
Well, they were a little more restricted, though, by their caps, by the fact that they had zero cap space, whereas Golden State still had a little bit of wiggle room in order to buy a pick. Cleveland had none. They had no leverage, no assets.
Miami, a big loss, I think.
Is that because you just don't like Bam Adebayo?
How is he going to play with Whiteside?
Because he might be able to play the power forward.
You know, and who's going to score? It's just going to be a black hole down there of no, don't even bother passing it down there.
Well, what if they say, I'm just spitballing it. What if they get Millsap? Adebayo can be your serviceable second team power forward.
Then that changes everything. But you're drafting him for like it seems fishy. It doesn't seem like it seems like way too high for just an athletic guy who doesn't know how to play.
It did seem high for me. I don't like Bam Adebayo. Like, I don't think in the NBA he fits, because he's a little too mechanical, and he plays big around the rim, but he's not as big as you would think. You know, and in the NBA that might get a little bit exposed. So I'm kind of with you on Miami. I didn't really care for the pick. You know, wanted to play devil's advocate with you a little bit, but I'm definitely starting to see things your way. For the East, I hated what the Knicks did. I mean, it's kind of like in vogue to just hate everything Phil Jackson does. I mean, we can talk forever about the Kristaps Porzingis stuff, but I feel like that was wildly overblown.
We could talk about, well, it's not the fact that it's overblown, it's the fact that why are you even mentioning it? I think that's the issue, not...
Yeah,
oh,
a
well,
GM
he
should have been fired right from the get-go just for even thinking about
it. Oh, he was going to offer a king's ransom for it. Well, yeah, that's obviously what you do. You don't, you know, Anthony Davis, if somebody said, I'll give you four first-round picks and, you know, all this, you know, everybody, here's the Herschel Walker trade.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, you can take them.
You know, that was the rumor that popped out a week ago with Paul George and I believe it was Atlanta. Atlanta supposedly at the trade deadline offered four first-round picks for Paul George, and Indiana said no.
Yeah, so if you come in with this super offer, yeah, okay, I might listen. If, you know, let's say, you know, Boston somehow swung another pick in there and they, you know, they got, let's say, five. They're like, okay, we'll give you 3-5 or 2018 and 2019 first for him. Oh, okay, we'll gladly do, but you don't mention that.
Yeah, it's all big on the Ntilikina pick and how he really works out for them.
And that, and you've brought Carmelo's value down to nothing, because they know, why trade for him when you know you're just going to wait till you buy him out or cut him.
Mm-hmm.
He has literally, nobody's going to offer, you know, for the trade kicker, he has, what, $25 million? Nobody has cap space for him, so they're not going to offer anything other than their worst contract.
And then there's
period.
The whole issue with the no trade clause, which has already been very well documented from last season. So
yeah, so you've ran into the ground your franchise player. You've alienated your superstar. You draft a point guard, and, you know, frankly, I like him, but he's just raw, and he's not going to be playing.
That's what I was trying to get at, like. the conventional wisdom is kind of coming out there that, you know, you pass on Dennis Smith Jr. Smith Jr. went right behind Ntilikina at number 9 to Dallas. But do you feel like they'll regret either that, not taking Malik Monk, not taking Donovan Mitchell, Justin Jackson? Like, do you feel like there would have been just some kind of better fit for the New York Knicks?
He's not going to start, you know, every minute in New York. They're still going to need a veteran point guard on that team. So for somebody who's extra, even Smith, I don't think you could start him on that team with Melo and Porzingis.
I also think that for Jackson, because this was his decision, it wasn't something in the hands of the coaches, that it was I hate to even say the words, but it was more of a triangle influence decision where you can take a point guard that's more of a floor general – like type of point guard where he sort of snakes, kind of a Mike Conley type that just sort of snakes through, doesn't try to take over the game, doesn't get too involved, lets the emphasis of the offense go somewhere else. You know, I felt like maybe that may have been one of the reasons why Ntilikina got picked over, you know, Dennis Smith. Obviously a lot of the other top point guards were,
oh yeah, as they probably said, oh yeah, I could totally do the triangle.
Yeah.
And in the end, this just, you know, not to copy Bill Simmons, but I said it, you know, independently at the same time. Just speaking of legacies, he has completely just blown his up.
Well, you know, it kind of goes the same way, though, as like with Michael Jordan when he was running the Wizards and now running Charlotte, where people just feel like he's just a bad team manager. But as a player, you'll never take that away. Now, Michael Jordan is the most famous athlete in the world. Phil Jackson as a coach, I don't think that can ever be really discounted. I don't really agree with that.
It's one of those in his old age now. It's like, well, maybe it was the players who did it. Maybe it was more Kobe than Phil. And then because he's trying the same antics now, and then the game has changed around him. And you can't just alienate literally the entire fan base, players, everybody against you.
Yeah, but I still feel. But would you agree though that as a coach that his history when he was with the Lakers and the Bulls, that's not really affected that much? That's kind of the same. I kind of feel the same way about him as I did maybe like 4 years ago before he took over the Knicks. As a general manager and a team president, yes, he's fucking sucked. But I kind of separate them. I don't bundle them together as like the legacy of Phil Jackson. You know, I guess it's just that assumption of Phil couldn't do it without stars, you know, but I mean, every team needs a star to be successful. You know, I mean,
well,
Kristaps Porzingis is a star. Carmelo Anthony is a star. You know,
he is a star. Then you ran your star into the ground,
mm-hmm.
and it just didn't work. But yeah, they get a big loss. Washington gets a loss because you complain your bench is a problem, and you wind up with Tim Frazier, who you like. You're like, oh, he was a decent backup.
He was our backup point guard. You know, he did get stock up one triple double somewhere along the way, because that's like the new thing in the NBA. Everyone gets a triple double. Ty Lawson, I think at the end of last season, got a triple double, for God's sakes. But you know, with Frazier, is he better than what they could have gotten with that pick in the 50s? He probably is, but he's not that much better. Is he better than Trey Burke? Probably. But it's not.
Yeah, Trey Burke, Brandon Jennings.
It's not a needle mover, you know?
You just have a bench player, but you don't have a developmental player. So
yeah,
it's just
I'm not as like befuddled by that one. It didn't really surprise me either way. That's why I didn't even bring up too much the transaction for the Pelicans. It's just the only thing is that it really hurts the Pelicans more, because now they're really behind the eight ball to get a point guard, whether it be Kyle Lowry, whether it be re-signing Drew Holiday. You really don't have a lot of options anymore. So that's the only thing about it that kind of made me a little nervous as a Pelicans fan. For Washington, I felt like it was just another move. How did you feel about the Pacers taking two UCLA players, TJ Leaf, you know, in the right outside of the lottery, and then there was Ike Onwabogu, who had like they found out they had like a knee condition that might be degenerative, which brought his stock way down. And he was a very raw freshman, and he wound up going 47th. But two UCLA guys going to the Indiana Pacers.
And Edmund Sumner, who did well before his ACL injury.
Yeah, I believe they bought that pick from the Pelicans in order to get him. So they must like him because they.
I thought it was a win because a glaring hole on that team was the four. Because, you know, you thought Paul George could be a forward, but he wasn't, so there was nobody to really take his place.
Yeah, and it's and the other thing too with the Pacers and these picks is that it would be unfair to look at these as, okay, these guys have to be the leaders of the rebuild in case they unload George, they don't get Jeff Teague back in free agency, and you're kind of blowing.
No, all you could do is just get a solid player.
But that's what I'm saying. It's unfair to like lump them in and say, okay, you have to start the rebuild. No, this is like that would be year zero, you know, because what you're doing is you didn't even expect that Paul George would do that. It was so late in the process of the draft that you can't just go in thinking, all right, we got to blow this up. You might not even get a deal done for Paul George before the start of the season.
It's the NBA draft where you watch all the highlights and you think all these guys are going to play 40 minutes and score 20 points and be all-stars because of their highlight tapes. You know, most of these guys will, at this, 10 minutes tops, 15 minutes, just garbage time, D-League. But TJ Leaf was a smart pick, so I think he can play well with Miles Turner. So I think that's a little win for them.
Well, we talked about getting another shooting big there, and that's exactly what they got with Leaf. He's got some potential for sure. I liked what the Bucks did with DJ Wilson. You know, I he's kind of one of those positionless guys. You know, you could play either at the four, the maybe the five, the three. I would doubt. I don't know if he's quick enough, but he's just one of those upside guys. You know, so I really really like that for the Bucks. You know, I'm kind of bullish on how the Bucks play and how that could work. Even though the front office issues with the new general manager that they just brought in, who had been an assistant behind Justin Zanuck. Zanuck did not wind up getting the job. So there's a lot. There's just so much issues with the multiple owners and Jason Kidd. But I do like the Bucks. I like the Bucks taking DJ Wilson.
Yeah, that seems to be a question mark with me is who really made this pick. And
exactly.
I don't know where he fits because I don't think anybody knows where he fits because I don't think – who is he backing up? Where
that's
is
what
he
I'm
going
saying.
To play?
It feels like a very positionless team. Like, you know,
yeah,
the only solid thing is Brogdon's a guard and Greg Winrow's a big man. You know, Middleton, Parker, Antetokounmpo, even John Henson, like a Thon Maker, they're all very kind of like they can go different places, you know?
Yep. And, you know, they're just that team where nothing makes sense. Toronto gets a big win for OG Anunoby, even though he probably won't play this year. But
now, how much of that is just boost the value of OG Anunoby being at the lottery level for so long that people just automatically think it was a steal because he went into the 20s? Maybe he's just not a good player.
It's one of those where it's a fit. You don't need to be the best player to be a good fit, and he'll be a good fit on that team because he plays defense. Oh, well, you have Damari Carroll, who is on year three of his deal, so he's, you know, it could be a nice replacement for him. And you also lost Terrence Ross, so down, you know, next year, bam, we now have our second unit 3-and-D guy.
Yeah, and PJ Tucker worked out for him, obviously, too, in the playoffs. And, you know, that would be – now, listen, I would never call him a replacement for Patrick Patterson. They are so different, it's not even funny. Like, Patterson was all offense. I don't know if Anunoby will ever average more than 10 points a game in the NBA. You know, he's just not one of those kind of players. He's an all-upside type of guy. The last one I really want to hit on with the Eastern Conference, unless there was one in particular one to bring up, is Philadelphia.
We got three teams left, but –
yeah, that's what I'm saying. But give me those other teams that you feel like you have to mention, or there's something that is notable.
Orlando, I put as a loss.
So you don't like Jonathan Isaac going with him, or you just feel like it's redundant?
It's redundant on a team who can't shoot, so you get somebody who can't play offense. You have Elfrid Payton who can't shoot. You have nobody at the two. You have Terrence Ross at the three, who's now going to be at the second unit because you want to start Isaac with Gordon and Biombo. Where is this team going to score over 80 points, period?
Probably not. Now, and Evan Fournier's contract, do you feel like it's looking worse? Or do you feel like
no, he's a solid player. It's just he does not fit on that team.
And what was the other teams that you wanted to bring up from the East? Like Detroit?
Detroit gets a check mark.
Yeah, great. Congratulations, Detroit. Moving on.
You've made a draft pick. But yes, Philly is a win and a loss. Because you'd mentioned this before, and I agree. You get your player. Okay, the process is complete. Well, good luck because you are not going to – 4 years down the line, you are not going to play. Your big four isn't going to be there. You're not going to have money for Embiid, Simmons, Saric, and – and Fultz.
Yeah, and Okafor is almost a formality that he's going to get unloaded.
So you're not going to have money for those four people, and so is everybody going to take a pay cut to be together? I doubt that, because considering you're already talking about maxing out Embiid now, so it's okay. Good. You got your player. They're going to be very exciting, but all those bevy of other picks, you notice who they drafted for the rest of the Euro stashes?
That's what I'm saying. For Colangelo, do you feel like that was the primary motivation behind Pizzeniks, Jonah Bolden, and Matthias Lesort? Like, do you feel like that was the motivation of, okay, let's just keep them away, we don't have to put them on our cap because we can keep a max pocket open in 2018 to go with Fultz, Embiid, and Ben Simmons before we have to max them out?
But they're all big men again. You have no shooting. You have nobody really a traditional, 6'7", 3". So you have, where is your bench? All you're doing is just drafting, as we know, veterans are the ones who lead your team into the playoffs. They're the ones who lead you far. Young talent only takes you for so long, and all these second-round picks you stockpiled, you're just wasting on more big men who aren't going to play.
Well, here's the other thing, too. A lot of people would say, well, the process won. Here's how I feel, though. And I was talking with Brad Woodling about this, who's a Philadelphia 76er fan. I kind of side with his end of it, is that, there's this tendency to celebrate what Hinkie did with the process because it feels like this is the end of it. This is the culmination of it, that you're winning by getting this top pick to go with Simmons and to go with Embiid. But Colangelo had to trade up and give up an asset to get to number one. That's not a Sam Hinkie move.
That's not a Sam Hinkie move. Yeah. And also, think of college. You've now graduated. Imagine being a Philly fan for the last 4 years and had to sit through all this misery. You can't get those 4 years back.
Yeah.
It's one of those, you got the player you wanted, but it was a very long road to be there.
Yeah, it took a little too long. That's the thing, too, about the process. Like, well, it's finally winning. Yeah, but if that's the case, if you're looking at it through those glasses, the process took too long. A lot of people feel like, well, the idea of it is that you keep doing it until you get the star. Here's the problem. Now you're at a point with, like we were talking about, Embiid, Simmons, then eventually Fultz, where once their rookie contracts are up, like the Thunder, and the
one's going to have to go.
You got to pay the piper, and you got to make really tough decisions on who's going to truly make your team or keep your team at the next level or at an elite level. And oh, by the way, none of these players know how to win yet. And the Sixers are so far away from being elite that a lot of team building would have to go. I mean, here's the thing. The process based on the Sam Hinkie perspective is ending, but the real process begins now. That's how
the process was. Nerlens Noel, who you traded for 2 second-round picks. The process was Okafor, who we haven't mentioned him being a part of any future on this team. That's part of the process, is you struck out twice hard. Not good.
I mean, so you feel like it's kind of a win. And I mean, at the end of the day, they got the number one pick, and I think Mark.
Oh, it's a win.
Markel Fultz is going to be a really good player. I at the worst, he'll be a very good player.
At the worst, he'll be a good player, but still drop this BS where, oh, Simmons will still be our point guard. No. Just be a normal team now.
Okay.
Just
let's scan over to the Western Conference. We already got our fill with the LA Lakers. I mentioned in passing about how I just didn't really care for the Suns because even though Josh Jackson could be really good, I don't know if he makes them better. I feel like they're kind of the same team.
I thought it was strange where the owner or the McDonough had to be like, no, we played by the rules with that pick. We didn't do anything wrong. It's like, did somebody say this is under
all the innuendo about Josh Jackson's people canceling the workout with the Boston Celtics because
and Ainge was butthurt. And,
yes.
No, the Phoenix, I gave a loss as Jackson was the fit there, but your second round pick you get, who do they?
They took Davon Reed out of Miami, which to me was listen, if you're in love, it's like, remember Anthony Brown with the Lakers? Like, if you're in love with a guy and that's just where your pick is, go ahead and take him. But, man, I don't know if Davon Reed's that kind of guy,
If they had, I think if they had swapped, and if it was Alec Peters at 32 and Reed at 54, I'd be like, oh, they got some good value, and you know, Peters coming off an injury, but Alec Peters, well, you're now behind Chris and Bender. Davon Reed doesn't do anything.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see him down the road if he's something. You know, he might be Archie Goodwin. He might be nothing.
Well, the thing is, he's a defensive three who's gonna back up Josh Jackson. And then Josh Jackson, you know, as you heard in the post interview, he's like, yeah, maybe I might have made a mistake not talking to Boston.
And, here's the other thing. Josh Jackson, you know, the biggest appeal with him is that he's a two-way player. Well, there's one thing that's really, really hard to drill into teams in the NBA, especially now, in terms of team building, it's defense. So this idea that Josh Jackson's going to turn around the defense with his versatility at his age is just stupid. Like, that's got to start from the top. You know, it's like a Memphis Grizzlies type of thing.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay, just speeding up a little bit. Golden State, obvious win, huge win. Get, you know, buying the player they wanted to get. So
yeah, Jordan Bell. You know, he's good insurance just in case you can't get back David West or I'm thinking kind of off the top of my head of some of the other role players they had on that championship team.
You can give Draymond Green a little bit of rest.
Yeah, you know, I mean, not absolutely get
the same way. The same way McCaw would, you know, he would give somebody else a rest. You can now play, you know, he's a nice developmental guy. Spurs, obvious win. They don't draft bad.
Here's the thing. Like, DeJounte Murray, they kind of picked him right around that same area last year. He played because of the fact that, you know, Parker got injured. He played well against the Rockets. Against the Warriors, I don't really remember too many DeJounte Murray sightings, you know, in the nitty-gritty of it. Derek White, kind of a two-way player, not a two-way player, but a two-guard is what I meant. Kind of a decent, kind of an interesting pick, I guess. A little, I don't want to call it redundant because
it's redundant, but at the same time, if Tony Parker is not coming back next year, you need a nice backup point guard.
I did not like anything the Blazers did. I did not like the fact that they reached up for a higher draft pick, which means a more expensive rookie contract for Zach Collins, who out of Gonzaga, center. They needed a center, which I understand reaching up if you wanted to get a center, but I mean, could you just have just stayed at number 26 or stayed at number 20 before trading it and got the center you wanted?
You couldn't afford all three picks.
I know, so. But couldn't they have just traded out from number 10 for, I don't know, cash? Something to that nature.
A future pick.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying like just give up on the draft, but yeah, you're totally cap strapped, and you're going into the tax possibly, and you have three first round draft picks. They wound up unloading one of them, you know. But I mean,
basically you could just sort of unload Vonleh, who that was literally everybody recaps.
And I just for Portland. And listen, I'm not trying to be mean on Caleb Swanigan. He worked very hard at Purdue. I just don't think he's an NBA player. I don't know. I don't see it. He would have to continue what he did his sophomore year at Purdue and just outwork everybody. You know, he's got the whole
one of those
about how bad he was, and you know how he had to work into shape and became this like Zach Randolph-ish type of rebounder.
And like Big Baby or Brandon Bass. It's just one of those. You know what? If you're a second unit guy and you could give 20 minutes, sort of like that Ed Davis role. Just come in, don't foul out, don't do anything stupid, give us a little bit of positive numbers, and it's better. Again, as opposed to Vonleh, who continues to give him absolutely nothing. I gave it a small win because they needed big men, and they got some big men because they had none.
I've got an L. I just don't feel like Zach Collins.
I didn't say it was a big win. It was a little.
Yeah.
A little W. Yeah, Houston gets a little W.
Yeah.
Houston gets Hartenstein from Germany. They could keep him over there for a year, let him develop. It's a nice stash.
Now,
I heard
his
pick.
Last name is Hartenstein. So now, God knows I'll never remember that.
Nothing special from them, but a small victory. I think we can, you know, nice.
How did you feel about the Jazz trading back in twice or moving twice in the first round? They got Donovan Mitchell and Tony Bradley. First of all, does that read into the tea leaves anything about George Hill and Gordon Hayward?
I think it's more of sort of, I think of insurance in case you move Derek Favors.
He's got 1 year left
because
on his deal.
If you sign George Hill, you're going to have to probably move Favors, who can't play with Gobert. And I think they're trying to find some new combinations.
Now, let me say this, though. Do you feel like they might have George Hill trapped in terms of negotiating because of the fact that so many point guards, a lot of these teams really feel good about the fits, like Dennis Smith with the Dallas Mavericks and De'Aaron Fox with the Sacramento Kings and Lonzo Ball with the Lakers? Do you feel like he's sort of like he doesn't have as many options? That's sort of the word out with Kyle Lowry, that his options are sort of running out.
And all it takes is one team to shake that up. All it takes is New Orleans to go sign Kyle Lowry for the carousel to really begin.
Okay, now you get me a little excited. Okay, would you poo-poo on that if the Pelicans actually gave like 3 years or 4 years, $80 million, or 80 or maybe $90 million to Kyle Lowry?
He wouldn't take that. It's a pay cut for him.
But if he did.
If he did, that would just make the thing, you know, let's say, not even Lowry, let's say Teague. Let's say they think Teague is a better fit than Drew Holiday. Or, Drew Holiday?
Yeah, Drew Holiday. Yeah, that's how forgettable he is. But, you know, it's, the Jazz, I feel I do trust their brass. Like, they've made really good picks in the draft.
They've
now,
good,
they did unload
picks.
Trey Lyles. You know, they did trade him in a trade with Denver on draft night. So they gave up on Lyles. So not all of them are winners. But
they're also being held hostage by Hayward, who, you know, not only Boston, but you have Miami, who are very interested in getting him. So it's one of those things. And reportedly Houston wants a meeting with him, too. There's a real chance they might lose him, and you have to sort of look for other avenues to start, you know, because you can't work so hard on your rebuild to get one playoff series and then bam, back to the drawing board.
Do you like Donovan Mitchell as sort of a change of pace because he's a really athletic guard? That's kind of what they thought of Alec Burks before when they paid him before the injuries kicked. But do you think that Mitchell can be that guy for the Jazz?
You like him, and I will defer to your judgment on him.
Okay. The Thunder with Terrence Ferguson, pretty simple. That was the only pick they had.
Win.
Okay. You like that as
you
a
have
D&D
to
guy?
You have to go for the fences. With that team, it's just, well, they're playing, you can't just sort of play it safe. You have Westbrook. You need to, that team, as you, the way they are built, can only, we saw it go so far and only do so much.
Okay. Our buddy Todd Weber's Sacramento Kings. I really like their haul. Like, I mean, I think De'Aaron Fox can be very good. I worry a lot about his jump shot, you know, especially the fact that it's just not consistent at all, especially from the three-point line.
But he's fast enough to overcome it.
And he's a good defender.
And he is a good defender, and he'll be exciting to watch. And you have Buddy Hield, who will be shooting it from the three now as opposed to trying to do anything.
Did you like them trading out from 10? And going down to, you know, to get multiples with 15 and 20. That 15, they take Justin Jackson out of North Carolina. He's kind of a 3-and-D guy, but he's 6'8". So he's got some nice, you know, he's got a nice floater game. I liked him. He's a junior, though, a little older. And then they take Harry Giles out of Duke, which is just basically let's give this a try, you know.
Let's just throw crap at the wall, and we got him, we got Labissiere, we got so many big men on our team. Let's just hope one of them pans out.
Now, we talked about him a couple of years ago when he tore his second ACL because his stock was so high before he even went to college. When you look at Harry Giles, what do you see?
He might be the worst college prospect drafted in the first round in recent memory.
Wow, that's some shade.
All you could go by is the results. Have you name me a worse first round pick?
Well, Curtis Borchardt, just right off the top of my head. I mean, there's been a few. Remember Josh Eustace with the Thunder?
But he did not for Fitz, but he was good at Stanford.
Okay, you're talking about just the numbers.
Yeah, Rafael Araujo was scoring big in BYU. Harry Giles averaged 4 points.
Yeah, he was – well, but then a lot of people say the same thing with Frank Jackson, who wound up 31st to the Pelicans, like that he was a bad fit on this super loaded, talented Duke team that had no chemistry kind of thing.
But I'm just saying, from a numbers standpoint, if you just only look – you know, you hit up Basketball Reference, let me look at their box scores. Oh, he only scored 4 points. How is he a first-round pick? That's all. He is just one of those you're basing it on potential. Maybe he could bounce back from the third surgery, but – Yeah, for them it's a win because you have nothing, and what the more lottery tickets you can get, the better.
And then the other one they had was Frank Mason. Frank Mason, he's tough as nails. Now, in terms of measurements, in terms of in terms of how good can he be defensively with his size, that's all obviously a big concern for Mason. I think at best he'll be a backup point guard. But do you think he'll play in the league for a while?
No.
He's a Wooden Award winner, all that stuff doesn't necessarily mean – Evan Turner was a Wooden Award winner. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a star. My Pelicans got Frank Jackson. All right, you tell me what you think.
I laughed.
Oh, thanks.
My text was just literally just ha 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 ha. And you're like, what happened? I'm just continue the laughter. I'm like, good luck with that.
Well, I thought it was Charlotte's. I was like, oh, look at Jordan. He took a guy from North Carolina again, and then you told me it was the Pelicans pick. And I was like, wait, what? we just talked about it. They needed a point guard. You know, so they got one. Did they get the best one? No. We talked about how there was going to be this giant divot at the point guard spot after – like, where was the cutoff at? Ntilikina?
Yeah.
Or would you say Derek White, who's kind of a two guard? But there was a huge drop-off there, you know, and you felt like, okay – after the second round, you know, you might see some guards start to get plucked, but mostly shooting guards, not necessarily point guards. The Clippers kind of did what the Jazz did, but it was on a lower level because it was in the second round. They don't have as much money to throw around because they're hard capped. They got Juwan Evans and they got Sindarius Thornwell.
Yeah, something seems to be up with that.
Are you saying Juwan Evans is the next Chris Paul, Adam Murray?
No.
Is that what you just said?
Obviously, something's fishy in Clipperland. But you're losing JJ Redick. You lost Paul Pierce. You have no starting two or three, and then you get a backup point guard. You already have Austin Rivers, and then Thornwell, who you like, but I don't.
He's a heavy guard, so I guess the notion is they can play him at the three if Wesley Johnson bottoms out. I guess that's the notion.
Okay, but it's just, strange, small L, but you need, especially because Doc Rivers doesn't like rookies either, so.
That's true. You got a good, how much did Bryce Johnson play? Like, none.
Bryce Johnson, Diamond Stone?
Diamond Stone didn't play a lick. You know, like, he's kind of like the LeBron of coaches. he's like, it's always veterans. He always goes with old reliable. The other one I'm noticing is the Nuggets. You know, they took Tyler Lydon, I believe, in the first round after a lot of moving that they made. They took a stash in Vlatko Kankar, and then they took Monte Morris, who is a point guard, kind of a 6'3" point guard, four-year player out of Iowa State who never, ever turns the ball over. So, you know, just, I guess, nice insurance, you know, because he's like the exact opposite of Emmanuel Mudiay. You know, I don't know if he'll be a starter in the NBA.
I don't know, but, you get Lyles with the deal. And
yeah, but do you think Lyles can still make something? I mean, Denver's just had a very nice cavalcade of just interesting players. Like, not necessarily guys that'll be stars, but just guys that could really be something eventually.
Yeah, and I think they're sort of it looks maybe from the outside that they're kind of looks like maybe Gallinari's not coming back. And you're sort of planning around it and trying to change your system just a smidge.
Do you feel like any teams, kind of to go general with the Western Conference, is there any teams I didn't hit on that you wanted to bring up?
You missed Memphis and you missed Dallas.
Well, Dallas had Dennis Smith. So do you feel like that was just an automatic win because that was their
automatic win? Well, I don't know the last point guard they've had.
Do you think he fits though well with Rick Carlisle? I know there was the inside word was that there was like a lot of applause in the war room for Dallas when Smith was there and they picked him. But he doesn't play great defense, or the notion out there in NC State was that he didn't try on defense. So, Rick Carlisle, that's requirement, so there's a little bit of like reprogramming there for Smith. Memphis was just – it was so typically forgettable Memphis Grizzlies. They get Ivan Rabb, and then they get Dylan Brooks out of Oregon, who I like, but he's so undersized for the position he plays. That's my biggest worry. I don't know if he'll even be a rotation player. to be honest with
the
you.
The problem is Memphis is going into a reboot and they don't know it yet.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, they got the whole black cloud of the Chandler Parsons contract, the Mike Conley contract that's going to blow up. It already has blown up, but it's going to go exponentially more. So a lot of people look at that 2019 pick that they owe to Boston, and people look at it like, oh, that might be a high pick because we don't trust Memphis to stay good by then. Are you kind of under that same notion?
Kind of. And then, you know, Rab, it's like, yeah, that's what – sounds about right.
Well, he's just he is a traditional five. I mean, he's Ryan Hollins. You know what I'm saying? Like, you look at him and you're like, yep, that's a center. You know, I mean, he's a good rebounding center. He can block some shots. But, I mean, I don't try to encourage people to come out a year early, but Ivan Rabb is a guy who hurt himself by not coming out a year early.
Yeah, Rabb and Bacon. And you have a lot of people who hurt themselves by coming out and just failing and, you know, falling and falling and falling. And there's too many freshmen. And, you know, what was the problem with the freshmen? Oh, yeah, they don't know how to play. So, you know, with the D-League, you're going to see a lot of high picks spending time down there.
Okay, let's just go with the West for a second. Give me your biggest win, like the ones that you feel like really made a difference for themselves.
The biggest winners outside of Minnesota would be – that's pretty much it. Just Minnesota.
You don't feel like Wolves. You don't feel like the Kings immediately got better. I do feel like they immediately got. Well, I feel like they got better in terms of their foundation. I feel like they'll still probably be the worst team in the NBA next year, just based on talent level, general talent.
Well, that's the thing, is they've gotten better, and you could say that, but Minnesota has turned themselves into a playoff team. Memphis might be their way out of a playoff team. Depending upon free agency, Clippers might be out of the playoff team. You have Utah might be out of a playoff team.
Yeah, you like the Rockets, but I guess slightly. And then the Lakers, I liked what they did because it's got a long-term plan.
It's got a long-term thing, but it's going to blow up immediately because you get Brook Lopez, but that's just he's just a rental. You have no intention of re-signing him at all. You're going all in on LeBron, who, you know, if again, LeBron and Paul George, where is Ingram going to play?
Oh, there's going to be a lot of riffraff about whether you get like this idea of, oh, we can get LeBron James and Paul George. Yeah. But do they really fit? Like, I know LeBron, you can play anywhere, including the four, and he can still be effective with his court vision. But, you know, can you play Paul George and LeBron James together? I don't know. We haven't seen it yet. You know, I know that Kyrie Irving can play with James because I've seen it. And James is a forward, and Kyrie is a guard. Of course you can play them together. You know, with George and LeBron, I don't know. You know, that's just that's very comic booky of like, hey, let's put these two superheroes together and it'll just be bing, bang, boom. Like, I don't know about that. You know, I've got my reservations about that. You know, when it comes to losers in the West, like the Suns, the Suns were just blah. I just don't care. You know, and the thing with the Clippers and the Jazz is that the only thing about free agency coming after the draft is that the draft moves are sort of connected with your off-season report of a team, so that if it doesn't work out for the Clippers and the Jazz with their star players and not keeping them or not being better, immediately it makes your draft feel either better or worse depending on what positions they fill. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it kind of hurts that. The other ones in the West, that none of them really stood out. In the what do you have in the East?
In the East, Brooklyn is obviously the winner. You disagree. Charlotte, only because they bring excitement to that team, who they've had absolutely none.
They still got Dwight Howard, so I feel like
they have some drama.
Yeah.
And I think those are the two big winners in the East. Philly, you could say, yeah, but Philly's not going to be good. You think Philly's going to all of a sudden win 50 games?
I think you're still being slightly hard on Boston. Like, I feel like Boston still got a good player.
Boston is being held up on free agency.
Mm-hmm. That's why, just mentioned with the Jazz and the Clippers, so much of it is connected to things we're
exactly
not sure of
yet. You sort of have things, you have plans going on.
The Raptors getting on Anobi, you liked a lot.
That's a great thing, but you know they're not. He's not going to pay dividends for them next year. And again, with the draft, you expect only, you know, this year was a rare thing, but for the most part, you look at second team NBA and it's like, well, those guys weren't that good.
Mm-hmm.
they played, but they're nothing special. So really, of all these picks, you're going to see 7 or 8 do something.
Yeah, losers. You disagree with me on it, but I did not – the Hawks just, like, I did not like that at all. Like, I just feel like that's just – that is a hard reboot. That's just a red alert. The Pistons were just whatever. The Knicks are just perennial losers at this point in pretty much everything they do. And I'm not going to be hard on the Pacers yet. Like, I don't – we don't – you know, we don't know anything.
They made – it was a smart trade. For me, like, yeah, Knicks agreed, and then Orlando.
Yeah.
In a league where scoring is the only thing.
I always keep forgetting about the Magic, don't I? I mean, are they a kind of a forgettable team with, like, the fact that they do have this new brass, but we don't really have any idea of what they want to do yet, because not only are they in this trying to do another reboot, it's they don't have cap space either because of the fact that they paid Vucevic, they paid Fournier, they overpaid for other guys. They got Terrence Ross's contract. Like, they still have to do some unloading if they truly want to commit to another rebuild. That's the problem.
Yeah, the problem was they failed the first one.
Exactly.
Hennigan.
It's the problem. It's like building on a foundation that you stripped down, but that house is shitty too. Now you got to tear that house down and start over again. You know, it's not easy. It makes
it just tough. Looks like you have no vision. Oh, they got a great defensive guy. Oh, okay. They already have defensive people, and
I think Isaac could be like the perfect role player. But I mean,
that's what you want. That's what you're looking for.
You know, that's the problem.
That's always what you want: a role player with a number 6 position.
Yeah. All right. So, what do you think we're going to be reconvening? You think that free agency is going to wake us up again for a red alert podcast for the NBA team and for the Place to Be Nation?
You never know. Last year, I think we wanted to take a break, and all of a sudden, it was madness.
Yeah.
This year, well, we'll know.
I remember we did one for DeAndre Jordan during the moratorium, and then Banana Boat happened, and it screwed us all up. And a month later, we were like, yeah, DeAndre Jordan didn't go to the Mavericks. You know, I don't know. It's silly season got started early. Let's see if it keeps going. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys. We'll see you again.